This is
Make It Kind.
M.I.P.
with Masamela Matfumo.
Mark Thompson.
Make It Kind.
Get woke.
New from Radiotopia presents Red for Revolution, an audio drama about Black love, queer romance, and liberation. Join Jasmine, an 18-year-old navigating her queer identity while learning about her grandmother's secret love affair. Through her discoveries, we're transported back to 1971 to witness two remarkable women embark on a romance that defies all conventions. Subscribe to Radiotopia Presents and listen to Red for Revolution wherever you get your podcasts.
On FM 89.3 Pacifica Radio, glad to be here with you. A lot going on, obviously, in terms of breaking news. It seems to be a shutdown, an end to the shutdown that has been agreed to, much to the regret of many who gave the Democrats a resounding victory just on last Tuesday. This is seen as a sellout and a cave-in by the dozen or less Democrats who went with it. We'll talk about that a bit later with Win with Black Women, who raised, I don't know, I think they raised like $100 million for Kamala in one night. But they're going to talk about how Black women won that election for us last Tuesday. Holly Holiday will join us a bit later. Also in breaking news, the Supreme Court has decided not to reconsider the Obergefell decision on marriage equality. That's big news. So something must have gotten into their coffee this morning, they're overturning everything else in the world. If they would just do that for voting rights, we'd appreciate it. But we're going to get started, especially since we're on radio in Washington, D.C. in this hour on Mondays. We have to have with us a dear friend who's a dynamic counselor and attorney. She's going to talk to us about a case of police violence in the context of this over-policed environment in which we live, especially in D.C. I think at count, there are probably at least 30 different law enforcement agencies in D.C. with uniformed law enforcement that can mess with you in Washington, D.C. We're going to hear all about the case that she's involved in and her client and what has happened. I was at the grand opening of her brand new firm, and she's doing great work. The CEO of E. Page White Law, E. Page White with the bad dreadlocks on Make It Plain this morning. Good morning, Paige. How are you?
Good morning, Reverend Mark. I'm good. Happy to be with you and your audience.
And glad to have you with us. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Always want to hear what you're up to and the important work you're doing. So let's get started. Tell us about this case that you're involved in now.
Sure. So my client, Philip Brown, was driving his car on October 17th. He was allegedly stopped for a TIT violation and a license plate violation. As he's being pulled over, MPD is riding around in what we're calling these police gangs. They're riding around with federal agents from Homeland Security, from Federal Border Control and Customs, U.S. Marshals, Secret Service. And so the MPD actually moves out of the way. Police officers are claiming that an engine revved and then an HSI agent shoots into the car multiple times. There's two bullets that go through the driver's side window and two bullets that go directly into the passenger seat. Thankfully, no one is sitting in the passenger seat or they would have been killed. One of the bullets went through the collar of my client's jacket. My client was charged with fleeing that night. He was held in jail for multiple days. At the preliminary hearing, the judge dismissed the case, saying that there was no probable cause, which is the lowest evidentiary standard that we have in our criminal legal system. There's no probable cause that he was fleeing whatsoever that night.
Wow. So the engine revved. The car didn't move, but allegedly the engine. First of all, is that even true? Is do you all dispute that the engine even revved? Because I mean,
oh, of course. Of course. So they are claiming that the engine revved and that the car made contact with the vehicle in front of it. We have no body-worn camera from this incident. His lawyer requested it. His criminal lawyers requested it. They were told that the body-worn camera was on lockdown by the Metropolitan Police Department, and that it wasn't released to anyone. What's more disturbing about this is that the police report of this incident does not include the fact that there was a shooting whatsoever. In fact, there is a question on the public incident report that says shots fired, yes or no, and the no box is checked. And so, yes.
Okay. I'm sorry, Paige. We must have a bad connection. Must be something wrong with the signal. Sounds like you said there was no report of shots being fired. Did I misunderstand you? Is that?
No, the public incident report, the public police report, we call it the Gerstein, that was filed on the public docket, makes no mention of an officer firing their weapon at all or a weapon being discharged at all towards Mr. Brown. It just says Mr. Brown was detained.
Okay, so there's a lot going on here I need to unpack. 202-588-0893, folks. The probable cause, the judge dismissed, that's good news.
Correct.
And the charge was, probable cause was that he was fleeing, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So are you saying there is no record whatsoever that shots were fired? No written record?
No written record that has been released to the public. Pam Smith, the chief of MPD here, the Metropolitan Police Department, has come on record and said that there was a second police report filed the next morning. Now, where it was filed and to whom it was filed, we have no idea. Because when you use the term filing, that means filing it on the public docket. Mr. Brown's preliminary hearing was not for several days after he was arrested. His lawyer was never given that alleged second police report. The government was never given that alleged second police report. It had not been turned over to even the government. And again, the government didn't even see the body-worn camera footage because it was on lockdown. So what we believe is that the Metropolitan Police Department created a CYA document, a cover your butt document, that they kept in their own internal files for when this came to light so that they could say, well, we have a second police report that has it, although no one has seen it.
Okay. Who in under what agency, which agency filed the first report? MPD?
We don't know. The only report that we have heard about that potentially contains the shooting is a second police report with the Metropolitan Police Department.
But the original one, the public incident report, the one where the shooting is missing, under what agency is that report filed?
MPD.
Yeah, with MPD?
Yes.
So, but again, now maybe I misunderstood you. Who fired, do we know which officer from which agency fired the shot?
Yes, it was an officer from Homeland Security.
So would they, Homeland Security, have its own report?
We don't know. We haven't been notified of any report. We do not know. We have certainly made requests to get them.
Wow, this is something else. So Pam Smith says, the chief of police in D.C. says there's a second report that was filed, but she has she even hinted whether the shots fired are in that report? Or she's not saying anything about what's in it.
She has said that in that second police report that it mentions shots being fired. But again, I've never seen that second police report. And we are told that second police report has other things that are not in the first report, such as the engine revving and the allegations of fleeing.
So how can we get that second report?
We have made the request to do so. They have responded back to our request saying that these documents and body-worn camera and evidence is part of an ongoing investigation. And so we are looking into remedies of how to get it.
an ongoing investigation of what or of whom? Your client has been absolved for all intents and purposes. Am I wrong about that?
Correct. The MPD is claiming now that they are investigating the shooting.
I see. Okay. But they're not sharing that with you.
Correct.
Because that's what cops do, right? They don't want you to have the information you need to hold them accountable.
Correct.
E-Page White with us, folks, as we talk about the case of Philip Brown. How old is Philip?
He's 33 years old.
Mm-hmm. So this is a relatively young man.
Young man and a father who almost lost his life that night.
Yeah, yeah. How can you describe that experience for him? How did he, I mean, I don't know what I would even be able to think or do if I was shot at, and I lived, but knowing I came this close, just this close to death for nothing.
Miraculously. And, you know, to add insult to injury, literally, to then be arrested, held in jail for multiple days, awaiting your preliminary hearing. Thankfully, he was assigned an attorney that had the preliminary hearing. There are so many attorneys that will waive because of how busy they are. But this attorney held the hearing. The officer had to come down and admit on the stand that a shooting happened, that the shooting was not included in the report, that he was instructed by a team lead not to include that in the report. We do have the transcript from the preliminary hearing. Again, at the end of the day, taken in totality, the judge found that there was no probable cause to continue with the case.
Okay, so wait a minute. An officer, and it said that he was instructed not to include the shooting. Was this an MPD officer?
Yes.
Wow, this is heavy. Okay, so my imaginations are running wild. Do we know how many folks, quick calls, 202-588-0893. Do we know how many other law enforcement agencies besides MPD, besides Homeland Security, were present on the scene when Philip was confronted? You know,
we know that U.S. Customs and Border Control was there, as well as there's some additional agencies, and I can look them up. But the police report is public.
Okay. Was ICE there?
We know that it was United States Customs Border and Control, Homeland Security Investigations, Diplomatic Security Service, United States Marshal Service, and the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
Everybody was descending upon Philip.
Correct.
No National Guard? Or we don't know.
We don't know. What we know is it is included in this police report, which again omitted the fact that there was an actual shooting on scene. So it is not far-fetched to think that there is additional information that is missing from this police report. But that those are the agencies that are reported in this police report.
Are you at liberty to say where he was pulled over for the dark tents?
Yes. He was pulled over at 42nd and Benning Road Northeast.
Wow. Was this like a regular stop where was law enforcement gathered in this one location, or did he get pulled over and then everybody just showed up?
We don't know exactly, but what we suspect is that they were all together. That's what we've seen as part of this task force that was created for the Make DC Safe Again initiative that President Trump implemented here, is that these agencies are riding together. There's information to suggest that the HSI agent was in an MPD vehicle. And again, MPD has different rules around what they have to do during a traffic stop about vehicle pursuits than federal agencies. So it's disturbing that MPD moved out of the way during this stop and in essence handed the stop over to federal agents.
And then if my imagination takes me a step further, I mean, you're the attorney here, so stop me if you need to. Those federal agents said, don't put in your report, MPD, that we shot at the brother.
What we know is that Officer Jason Sterling, who was the MPD officer that testified at the preliminary hearing and also who wrote the Gerstein in this case, the police report in this case, that he testified that he talked with a team lead and that the team lead instructed him not to include that in the report.
And in this scenario, a team lead, would that necessarily be an MPD officer or someone else within that?
We believe it's an officer with MPD.
You do? Okay. Wow. This is something. Paige, talk to us, Paige White with us, folks, as we talk about the case of Philip Brown shot at by Homeland Security Investigations during a traffic stop for tinted windows and a missing front license plate. That's what alleged. First of all, is that even true? Are his windows or his license plate in question? Or does that even come up now since they went to probable cause of flight?
It's a non-factor in multiple senses in that we have been given no concrete evidence from, or no evidence at all, not just concrete, but no evidence at all from MPD about what occurred during this stop. We have no power to subpoena video at this point because we haven't brought a case. At this point, we are just saying, give us the information, give us what happened in this matter. And the only people that can really do that at this point are the Metropolitan Police Departments and these federal agencies, and they have not given us access to any of that. But also, you have someone who has stopped for an alleged traffic violation. That is a ticket. That is, it's nonviolent. And so the fact that anyone pulled out a weapon and much less discharged that weapon multiple times, almost killing someone, is deeply disturbing.
Yeah. That's very disturbing. You said you've not brought a case yet. If you were to bring a case, what would it be? I mean, and how would we get that ball rolling? Under what auspices would that be? Because I guess there's still grounds because he was shot at. Aren't there still grounds for a criminal case?
Oh, certainly. There's shooting somebody in that manner is assault with intent to kill. Yeah. Conspiring to cover up that a crime is conspiracy. That's accessory after the fact. And so we would certainly be asking for these officers not only to be investigated, but to be criminally charged with their actions that night. Beyond that, we are certainly looking into what we can do civilly for Mr. Brown. And the first step is figuring out who is all involved. Who was involved, who was there, and who did what.
But that's part of the agenda to cause confusion. You got a whole gumbo of law enforcement agencies. Everybody's there. It's just buck wild. And so it's probably a way to obfuscate, to prevent you from knowing who all was involved, and to some point, to some extent, prevent you from finding out who fired the shot. I mean, that's really what we're going with, right?
Correct.
Yeah. 202-580-8893, MIP on 89.3. Folks, want to get your thoughts on that. I wonder how many of you have had similar experiences in terms of traffic stops and being pulled over. The flight, the alleged flight or the fleeing, revs the engine allegedly, hits the car in front of him. What car was that? Has anybody seen that car? Whose car was it?
We have not seen that car. A description of the vehicle is in the police report, but we haven't seen that car or heard of any damage being done to that car.
Okay. And Paige, you know, we know each other. You reached out to me. Do you have any idea how widespread this type of incident could be in Washington, D.C.? Is it happening to other people as well?
Yes. And so Pam Smith has come on record and essentially said that her officers didn't do anything wrong in this situation, that they followed protocol that predated her. And so the fact that our chief of police has endorsed and said that there was nothing wrong with the fact that the police report, the only police report that has been filed anywhere, does not contain any mention of the shooting, and saying that that is protocol, that is deeply disturbing. How many other police reports and incidents have happened like this, where there's just been no mention and no record of it? If it weren't for Mr. Brown's bravery and his lawyer's diligence, the public would not know about this.
And Paige, the Make DC Safe Again initiative, isn't that ongoing?
It is ongoing. And so that is one of the, that's a misconception, is that this is no longer happening and that federal agents are not working with MPD. And that is just not true. They are riding around in what we call police gangs, stopping people for no reason. And again, these federal agents are not trained on street policing. They're not trained on the Fourth Amendment, Fourth and Fifth Amendment. They're not trained to Mirandize people, stop people for probable cause. And I think that that is demonstrated in the fact that at a preliminary hearing, the first mention where someone has to get on the stand and testify to something, that a judge outright dismissed this case.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's meaningful that a judge did do that. And so it ought to be a pretty much an open and shut case. If the judges ruled there was no probable cause for flight, to accuse him of flight, then those shots being fired are definitely wrong, right? And I mean, so I guess the thing that's kind of unfortunate about this, you can't get access to the information. They're holding it. They're covering it up. Sometimes these things can take months, can't they?
They can. They can. And so we think that that is what they are banking on. This has caught the attention of a lot of people because it is so disturbing. And I think that what they're hoping is that they can buy as much time as possible so that people forget.
Forget what's going on. Mm-hmm. Paige, what would you have the community do to support Philip Brown? First of all, how is he doing? I'm sure has some PTSD.
He's deeply traumatized right now, you know, beyond being shot at, having the people that shot at you then put you in jail, to be in jail for several days. He is a father, he has several children. And not know, in essence, what was going to happen to you. And unfortunately, at your very first appearance in C-10, the judge cannot consider anything outside of the police report. And so there were people in the courtroom yelling, he was shot at, he was shot at. And the judge was saying, I cannot consider that. I cannot consider that until the preliminary hearing. So to be held in jail and then go through that hearing, you know, he's recovering as best as anyone can. He's traumatized. And, you know, we are going to fight for the protection that really DC police should be giving him and should have given him.
Paige, what would you enjoin the community to do in this matter?
So there's a number of community organizations here that are calling for accountability, writing to the DC council members about this issue, having them pass emergency legislation for this task force to stop. Additionally, you know, calling for transparency, calling the Metropolitan Police Department, the 6th District, the headquarters, and demanding accountability and transparency into this incident. Release the body-worn camera. Tell us who the officer was that was involved in the shooting. Tell us who the officers were that were on scene, and give transparency into this alleged investigation.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's important. And you've got to get to the bottom of this. Does the not to toot a horn of mine, but you know, I co-authored the legislation for the Office of Citizen Complaints in Washington, D.C. We got that done in 30, it's been about 30 years. Is that effective? Is that a recourse? Can they get involved immediately and perhaps even get, because I think at one time, I don't know if they still do, they had subpoena power, we're trying to get it. Can they get what we need?
That is certainly something that we're looking into.
Okay, okay, very, very important. Attorney E. Page White. Well, Page, appreciate all your hard work and congratulations on the launch of your own firm. And we are going to be watching this very closely. Please keep us posted on what's going on with this case and your client as well. Okay.
I will do that. Thank you. Thank you. And have a great rest of your morning.
You too. You too. We'll catch up.
Talk soon.
All right. Bye. Take care. Attorney Paige White joining us from Washington, D.C. Wow. Brother gets shot at. And so, I don't know. First of all, yeah, I mean, to get shot at. And then these bumbling fools not only don't know how to do a traffic stop, don't know what probable cause is or anything like that. And then they don't even know how to fire a straight shot. Not that they should have known that. This is not good. Not good. Not good. Last Tuesday was a big day, y'all. And a lot of good things came from it, but I want to get your thoughts. Women with Black Women is going to join us momentarily, but we'd love to get your thoughts on what happened last night. I said on this show on Make It Plain Thursday, which is not on WPFW, that there's this tendency on the part of Democrats. One, we are understandably demoralized from November 2024. And that has caused a great deal of apathy. But now, when we win, we get lost in a euphoria and then we go to sleep. And when, I mean, say we, I mean the tent, you know, a caller called last week and talked about how big our tent is and how problematic they call right here on WPFW on Make It Plain, MIP on 89.3. The tent is big. And we saw how big it was last Tuesday because you had extreme personalities win elections. There is nothing that Abigail Spanberger, Mikey Sherrill together have in common with Zohran Mamdani here in New York, right? But what they do have in common is the people they represent. So there's more than one way for this to happen. And to show that, to show, and despite the caller who called the WPFW last Monday, despite the big tent, or which Dr. King would not say it so disparagingly, he would call it the beloved community. Despite that, we won. We need to capitalize on it, not cutting deals in the Senate when people are going to lose their Affordable Care Act subsidies and no longer be able to afford the health care that they need to live and to make it. So that's very, very important. Joining us now. And her primary organization is Sisters Lead, but also know she's Win with Black Women. I don't want to get you in trouble. What hat are we wearing today? Are we Win with Black
we're
Women
definitely
today?
Definitely Sisters Lead, 10 toes down, because we're talking about our report and Black women and all the great things that they were able to accomplish in 2025. Although we can also talk about 2024 because we got that report too.
Okay, so that's good. So that's what we want to get into. First of all, Holly Holiday of Sisters Lead with us. I will mention though her a very meaningful role in Win with Black Women, who raised that I think y'all raised $100 million for Kamala in one night on that Sunday night. Is that what it was? Something like
that. Yeah, that happened. $1.4 million for, we got on a call and did the thing. That's Black women doing their thing.
Yes. And so we are thankful for that. So, you know, you had said to me, you had done a report about the difference, as Black women always do, making elections like this and made last Tuesday, Holly. So I'm going to give you the floor. I already know what y'all did. I'm clear, but you have all the deets, the details. So let's get into this.
Well, I think the first thing is I want to dispel the myth that, and I've seen this narrative continue, right? After every election, we all want to take credit for this happened, or we all want to blame for this happened. And I think that the big takeaway for me is that what this narrative shows is that we no longer are driven by one ideology or one identity, right? That this, if this election teaches you nothing, it is that the future is diverse and we've got to get all the people in. Yeah. And the fact that we are hearing reports that the future is white, the future is female, the future is, you know, based on two people winning. I've been seeing that narrative, you know, that's where we're headed. We got to dispel that. And so one way that Sisters Lead, Sisters Vote weighs in is that we want to make sure that Black women are not only seen, but amplified, and that their leadership is part of the dialogue. And so that is undeniably true this time. Also, I think as we talk about the blue wave, we got to talk about who's really driving this blue wave. And the reality is, it's Black women. Black women have continued to show up in the 90 percentile every single election, and this election is no different. The fact that we now have, and nobody still, by the way, no demographic still approaches those margins. And even when we look at young voters, guess who's leading amongst young voters? Black women. So another story that we don't unpack, because when we don't name things and when they are unmarked, they continue to erase our history. So I'm going to start there. So one of the things that we want to talk about is first that we voted. There's no question that Black women showed up and voted, and that their vote and the stability and continuity of their vote has been what is driving this blue wave. The second thing that we talk about is that we are leading. We saw another historic number of women running. And the thing about their running is this: they're running everywhere. They're running in small towns. They're running in suburbs. They're running in big cities. They're running in all the places in between. They're running in blue districts, red districts, purple districts, wherever you think there might be a Black woman. And it's not about Black voters. It is about Black women's leadership. They are running. And here's the other point, and the final point. They are winning. They are winning in the small towns. We can look at Georgia, where we have, I'm still counting mayors in Georgia, but I want to particularly lift up the mayor in Meador. Why? Because in Meador, it has been a completely white, completely Republican district forever, town forever. No one ever thought there would be a Democrat, much less a Black woman won, and she won. And she won there. I want to talk about the fact that we are seeing Black women win in suburban areas. Again, the holy grail of so-called whiteness, and we're seeing Black women win. And of course, we know about the mayors in Detroit and Albany and Syracuse. So we know, and it's not hard to convince people that you can win in the city, but we're winning there too.
Kansas City, Conyers, Georgia.
Absolutely. My hometown, Kansas City.
Swainsboro, Georgia. Pritchard, Alabama. Oakland, of course. Charlotte, North Carolina. Vi Lyle's fifth term. Wow, Vi's been mayor for a minute, hasn't she?
She's been mayor for a minute. Can you believe that?
but you mentioned, let's go back. You mentioned how this is the women's moment. And it's interesting to hear people say that, especially with regards to white women, because we've had these moments before and didn't work out too well, right? I mean, we, you know, and on the national stage, I mean, I think it shows what can happen in a state versus a national ballot. We saw what happened with Hillary Clinton. We saw what happened with Kamala Harris. But Abigail Spanberger and Mikey Sherrill, you know, there's been a lot of conversation, and you talked about diversity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to win elections, I mean, and you've been a political operative for years. I mean, if you probably have in your mind, what are the characteristics of an ideal candidate? And no, nothing personal, but Abigail and Mikey don't necessarily represent that. You know, the charisma, the excitement is not there. But as I've said, you know, we can't encourage everyday people to run for office and win and try to win. If everybody we want to run looks like they come out of central casting, we'll talk about Obama. That's not real either. Everybody's not built that
way. That's not realistic.
That's not realistic.
All.
So you can't just say just somebody doesn't is boring and they shouldn't run, they shouldn't do something. So yeah. That's number one. So I don't take anything away from them. And in fact, I think in moments like this, it shows how the voters are saying these issues are more important than these personalities and their lack of charisma. One. Two, they would not have won, looking at your report, Lord have mercy, if not for Black women. Black women voting for white women governors, which explodes and implodes the narrative that we heard after in November 2024. And I know some Black women felt this way, Holly, but then it metastasized on social media, and I've heard that was done purposely. Black women
that's
don't
right.
want to do nothing no more. Black women don't
no,
want to do nothing.
Right.
Black women don't want to be in the streets. Black women don't want to vote. Black women don't want to work with white women. Black women don't want to do nothing. Black women, and let me just share these numbers with you all as they're on my screen. The 96% of Black women voted for Abigail Spanberger in Virginia. All right.
Higher than numbers than they voted for Kamala Harris, by the way, percent wise.
Okay, that talk now. Help me.
Well, I'm saying I think what we have to remember here, and you alluded to it, right, is that Black women in particular, but I would say voters in general, most of us vote pragmatically. We're voting for what our interests are. So you had 92% show up for Kamala and 96% show up for Abigail Spanberger. I'm just saying. It makes sense. And by the way, against another Black woman. Why?
Right.
Because it's a little bit about representation, but it's mostly what you just said. It's mostly about issues. We know we needed to come out in a different way. Now, let's talk about this rest, because I got, you know, the rest thing, people misinterpret the rest.
Right.
The rest is not about taking a nap, because that's one way to think about rest. The other way to think about rest is restoration. And when Black women said we're taking a rest, what we really meant is we need to take care of ourselves. We need to prioritize where we are sitting in this moment. We need to gather in our spaces, not in the wide world open spaces. And we need to figure out what is best for our community. Because here's another thing about Black women. When we show up, we ain't showing up with just Black women. We show up in community, we show up in families, we show up in neighborhoods. And so in order to really understand and really deep unpack what happened in 2024, we needed to take a step back from trying to save everybody and figure out what we needed to do to try to save our communities.
That's right.
And I
that's
think
right.
that's what you saw in 2025. So no, we're not going to be at the front of your protests, although some of us may choose to participate. No, we're not going to be trying to give you the formula to save the world. We needed to regroup and think about what we need in our own communities and how we needed to show up. And the reality is, in this election, it was reflected that we did exactly that. We needed to think about who do we want representing us. And so initially for us, starting in these small places, I think of this as, you know, we all know that everybody's not going to be at the top of leadership forever, some because of term limits, some because of age, and some because they're just going to get voted out. So what we really need to be thinking about long term for our future and protection is who's going to be next? And so I like to think about these reports as a roll call of what's next. Who's going to be next? And I need people to understand that you got lots of Black women to choose from, because we have a lot of political talent out here across the country that is ready and prepping for these higher roles.
Big deal. Big deal. I just also want to lift up, too, you don't have a governor, Mikey Sherrill, without 95% of Black women.
Absolutely not.
For her in New Jersey. Now, a couple of things. You mentioned 92% in Virginia voted for Kamala Harris. So 4% is a decent margin of error. That other 4% probably realized they messed up in November by not showing up. Because, I mean, again, we thought we had it. A lot of people, you know, that's the other thing about our side, Holly. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't really declare victory or be too self-confident. As far as, well, I ain't got to vote because Mark and Holly said we good. So I ain't got to.
We are not good. We're still building.
So we're not good. Also,
but we better than advertised, but not quite to good.
Better than advertised. Now, and when you get a minute, if I can be as presumptuous as to give you an assignment, I mean, you may already know it. I'm looking at Mikey Sherrill and the numbers in New Jersey, 95% of Black women voting for her against Chitterelli. I wonder what the vote was for Raz Baraka in the primary.
Oh, back in the primaries. Black women definitely split themselves amongst various candidates. And Ross did pull, I can't remember the exact percentages, but I do have them. But he did pull off a pretty decent slice, especially because, as you well remember, right before his election, he made a huge stand around immigration. And going with Congresswoman MacIver, who was driving the inhumanity of treatment of immigrants in New Jersey and specifically in the city of Newark. And so that did garner a lot of support. Because again, to your bigger point that you keep making, and I want to stand on 10 toes with you, we are looking at how these issues are impacting our community and who our champions are. I think one of the things that we definitely are seeing in terms of how Black women are voting is that more and more are looking for people who align with their agenda, as opposed to waiting for the politicians to say, here's what we're going to do for you. We're coming and saying, here's the things that we care about. Who's meeting what we need the most?
Yeah. And I would have liked to have seen our brother win that. I mean, and I was one of the people who encouraged him to run.
Well, he was a classmate of mine at Howard University.
All right, now.
He was the student body president when I was a junior. And then the administration that I championed came in right behind him. So it would have been nice to see my fellow Bison get that job. But I know that Roz's political future continues. And so I can't wait to see what he does next.
In Georgia. So, and this is important, Public Service Commission. And this is the lesson in this, folks. Down ballot, down ballot, down ballot. Everything is not at the top of the ticket.
No.
Georgia power bills have gone up 6 times, multiplied times 6. So it made me feel good if people said, you know what, I got to go vote for the Public Service Commission.
Yeah.
I mean, there was time you couldn't, I'm going to be honest with you, between 08 and 16. Folks only wanted to vote for one office, you know, and all that other stuff went down the drain. So the fact that people are getting that Public Service Commission, that's important. Also, in some House and State House and State Senate races, that's where the redistricting is happening. So we need people there. Everything's not in Washington. Teresa Gillespie Isom flip state Senate District 2 from red to blue in Mississippi, which helped to break the Republican supermajority. Black woman.
That's right.
Erica Evans, Seattle's first Black woman city attorney. Virginia, not just Abigail. Black women flipped 4 House of Delegates seats from Republican to Democrat. All 14 incumbent Black women delegates retained their seats. Of the 42 Black women the Sisters Lead Sisters Vote tracked on the general election ballot, only 6 lost in Virginia. An 88% win rate for Black women candidates in Virginia. That's amazing. And at some point, I'd be curious to see, you know, how many white voters voted for some of these Black women, because I think there may also be a narrative amongst white voters. Black women get stuff done, y'all. They don't play. Now, and that's good. That's bittersweet, because, you know, they think we Black women get stuff done for other reasons, too, because we all Black women always took care of them and suckled their babies. So now, as opposed to doing that, maybe they're realizing the value of Black women when it comes to policy and issues. I mean, I think that's something. I think that's something to think about. Am I right?
Yep, you are correct. You are absolutely correct. And listen, here's the thing. I want to go back to Public Service Commission, because that is so important. Again, practical. Again, voting on our interests.
Right.
Again, figuring out places where different kinds of leadership is needed.
Yes,
keep
right.
in mind that some of these jobs were up in 2024 as well for Public Service Commission, and we were not successful. So this was our second bite at the apple, not with this particular candidate, but the second bite at the apple to flip it, because we saw prices, utility prices in particular, continue to go up.
Yeah.
Okay, so we are going back and going back. This is kind of like are we withdrawing from certain things? Yeah, because we're using new tactics.
Yeah.
We're using new tactics because we can't use these old tactics in the current environment. We have to do something new. You kicked us out of our jobs. Mm. You took away our benefits. You've taken away our humanity. You've taken away our voting rights. You know, you're taking away our bodily autonomy. At some point, there's going to be a backlash, and it definitely starts local, because what we also recognize is that's where we can actually have real conversations with people. Yeah. And these are the conversations that we believe are going to change America. Again, also note here, because I think about the future and not just what's happening right now. Think about the districts that these places undergird. Think about the congressional districts that are really, really red, that now have these Black women that are in leadership that are going to learn how to do certain things. This is what we have to focus on and think about.
Yeah, no, that's very, very important. Holly Holiday, Sisters Lead, Sisters Vote. Let's get a quick call in. And hey, Black women, roll call in. How do you feel about what Holly's saying? And what did you do? You know you contributed some way, somehow to all of this. Robert, God bless you. You're on the air with Holly Holiday. Go right ahead.
Thank you. First of all, let me tell you, women hold up half the sky. And I'm for the Equal Rights Amendment. I'm pro-choice. I vote. And I believe in health care for everyone. And right now we have a united front against fascism, but we got 8 Democrats who sold out. And once you sell out, the rest of it is just psychobabble and trying to justify why you sold out with rhetoric. And I just want to thank the sister for being in the movement for justice and fair play. Thank you.
Yeah, she's a beast. Holly's a beast. Holly, you know, you and I in a number of threads. You and I are probably in about 10 different threads together talking about everything. And then I think we just discovered the other threads we're not in. And that's too much, because we're in too many already. But how are you and Sisters Lead Sisters Vote dealing with just last night? You know, we win, we deliver. And then folk sell out and cut deals and cave. And none of those people, not a single one of them was a Black woman.
That's right.
Huh?
That's right.
Here's
the thing with that issue. And this is part of why having Black women at the table is important.
Uh-huh.
They have pushed us to a dangerous narrative that we should not accept. They've pushed us to a choice where they are framing the issue about hungry kids versus sick kids. Do we eat or do we have medical care? That's a false narrative to start with. The real question needs to be, why have you pushed us to this narrative in the first place? Because the reality is, it's about billionaire tax breaks versus whether we eat or have health care. We've got to keep shifting the narrative back to the real enemy. We tend to find these fights, and then when we don't have agreement, we say, oh, let's shoot everybody who didn't agree with us. That's not necessarily the primary problem. And again, I'm going back to why it's important to watch these places, these districts and these cities that are under these districts and these counties and these local races this year that are under these districts. And Virginia is a perfect case study because they roll up to these congressional places where we're seeing all this foolishness happen. You know, and that's the real issue. We shouldn't even be talking about sick kids versus hungry kids or sick people versus hungry people. The real question should be, why are we giving more money to the billionaires that are neither sick nor hungry instead of taking care of our own people? I put to you that if the question was put to the American public, would you rather have immigrants in your community with quality healthcare, quality education, and quality access to food, or no immigrants and no food and no healthcare? Because that's the future that we're really talking about.
Yeah.
Also, we got to recognize, we got to stop just beating up on one party when it's not just one party that's making this happen. Listen, people who happen to be progressive, we're going to have more discussion, more disagreement than the Republicans because we're not homogenous. And that's good. And we need to embrace those conversations. We don't need to beat up and stab the people in the heart because they don't agree with us on one issue. We need to be smarter than that. We need to recognize that it's going to take a coalition of identities, which, by the way, only one team is really trying to make that happen. And how do we fight to make sure that the coalition is well, not just one identity? Because right now, one identity is winning if you want to play real identity politics, and it's not people who look like me and you.
That's right. Party, it's a party of one. One identity, one coalition, one group of people.
Yeah, so it's a lot easier for them to agree when they are the same, are very close to the same. When you're dealing with trying to pull people together that works for literally all or even most, you're going to have some disagreements. The question is, how do we get through those disagreements and how do we arrive at a place that works much, much better? And that means a future reimagined. It doesn't mean going back to the way we were before. It means reimagining what we could be in the future if we just simply acknowledge that we really actually are in this boat together.
Holly Holiday of Sisters Lead, Sisters Vote. How can people get involved with Sisters Lead, Sisters Vote?
You can follow us on social media everywhere at Sisters Lead. Please, our official report comes out on Friday, so check us out. You can go to our YouTube channel on Friday and see the whole cabal unfold. But this has been a great snapshot and preview. We're going to go deep into the crates talking about Black women's voting, Black women leading, and of course, Black women winning.
Thank you, Holly, for joining us. Thanks for the preview. Folks, it has been Made Plain.
Thanks for getting woke and listening to Make It Plain. As always, perform an act of kindness on behalf of an elder or young person. Write a letter to a sister or brother who just so happens to find her or himself incarcerated. Offer libations to the ancestors upon whose sturdy shoulders we all now stand. And above all, give thanks to the God of your understanding by whatever name you call her and him. All God asks of us is that we give each other love. Thanks for giving MIP love. And please remember to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. If all hearts and minds are clear, it has been made plain.